Now stay with us for Martha's conversation with journalist and documentary filmmaker Mike Grundman.
Mike Grundman screens his latest documentary, Why Me? Tom Moran's Long Walk, for the first time tonight at Harrisonburg's Court Square Theater. Mike's film is our chance to spend 30 minutes in the company of JMU kinesiology professor Tom Moran, who was born with cerebral palsy.
Ready? Where do your feet go? Aha, that a boy.
There gets to be a buzz in the hallway about certain instructors. There was a buzz about him right away.
That's better.
When Tom walks, he expends the calories like you can't believe.
Rotate!
Within a couple of minutes, Barrett was jumping rope, and I was just about in tears because I've never seen Barrett jump rope.
Mike Grundman is a journalist and a teacher as well as a documentary filmmaker. He spent 18 years as a working journalist with such papers as the Sacramento Bee and the LA Times. Mike Grundman now lives in Harrisonburg, teaches journalism at JMU, and continues making documentaries about subjects that interest him, such as Tom Moran.
Tom is a JMU kinesiology professor, came here about 3, possibly 4 years ago. Tom was born with cerebral palsy. He stands about 5'0". From the waist up, he looks like a bodybuilder. He sort of is. When he was a kid, he became a sports fan very early and wanted to do sports. They wouldn't let him. One of the things they told him in junior high or high school was, your cane is considered a weapon, so can't have you on the field. He was crestfallen by that. He then decided, since he had a good mind for sports, that he wanted to coach. He became a superb coach, went to college, majored in PE, and was one of the assistant coaches on the soccer team, and told the head coach he wanted to become a soccer coach at the university level. He soon learned that the national coaching body would not let him take the test because he did not have playing experience, despite his being a very accomplished coach already. So that, too, was a giant blow. That put him on the detour of combined disability with sports and disability with fitness, which is teaching kids to do fitness and sports, kids with disabilities. When he came to JMU just a few years ago, he started some programs serving these kids. They have grown exponentially into, last I heard, 10 different programs. By now, it's probably 15. Serving easily more than 100 families, maybe 200 now.
How long did you work on this documentary? How much
time? About a year and 9 months.
So this is like a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
a
like
major,
a baby.
Yeah, major relationship. How did you hear about Tom, and how did you say, I want to invest this deeply in this man's story?
I had seen an article that a couple of our students had done on him for one of the student magazines, Curio. One of my colleagues, mentioning that, said he knew I was looking for a project. Said, well, why don't you make a documentary on Tom Moran? He seems, you know, visually interesting and in other ways. I said, that sounds good. It's certainly a worthy subject. It's a good cause. So I had lunch with Tom. And he said, okay, first of all, why me? And
did you know that would be the title?
Only a little later, after he gave me the anecdote of being a child, so crestfallen, not being allowed to play sports, going into his room, looking up at the ceiling, and asking God, why me? So I put those two together, and that informs the title.
Yeah.
The way I make films, it's kind of a fishing expedition. You asked what made me decide to make this such a, you know, a long-term commitment. It usually doesn't look that way at the start. It's more like, I think I'll make a short little film on so-and-so, imagining 4 months, 6 months.
Including editing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course, we know editing is about 98% of filmmaking. So my fishing expedition style with most of my subjects is just basically, I want to shoot them in action. I don't necessarily, or even most times, want to start with the long interview. I want to get follow the person in action. I want to be the fly on the wall.
Okay, I've seen this film. So when you say the long interview, there are shots where Tom is just sitting in a chair talking. Mm-hmm. So that was not your starting place.
Right.
Okay, so you just head out and follow him around with a camera?
Exactly, because those scenes will generate interesting interview questions. I want to be there when he's with the kids, doing his various things and things on his own, such as trying to get fitted for an adapted bike that the JMU engineering students were building for him and some other students. It was an elliptical machine reconfigured onto three wheels so that he could stand and he could propel himself not just with the pedals, which is would have been hard for somebody with CP, but also with the hand grips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that contributed to the forward
the locomotion.
Motion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why am I sitting here on the radio doing my hands?
You're doing it nicely, Martha.
Yeah, it's on the elliptical. It sounded like a good idea. You like Tom. It's a good story. What tipped you over to, you know, this is my story?
And, yeah, I'm going to stick with it to the end and make it good.
Even though it's 4 months came and went, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Right. That actually is a pretty easy thing because the subject I chose, and it's kind of on a theme with other subjects I've chosen, is I realized how much Tom went through and even more how much he puts into his programs, how much effort he puts into his programs, just strenuous effort and hours, ungodly hours sometimes. I quickly realized the film has to be something that lives up to what he is and what he does. So that was my brief. And easily stated, not easily achieved. I think I came up with maybe 30, 31 edits by the time I was happy with it.
31 different edits?
Yeah. I mean, they evolved. You know, toward the end, they were similar to each other, but they changed in some significant way.
Okay. So it's like 31 revisions of a novel set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where were you going with all those edits? What was wrong? What needed to be tweaked?
Well, one thing to start with is how many hours of footage I had, which was about 30, 32 hours. Mm-hmm. So for a show that's a little less than half hour, it's a broadcast half hour. So that's a shooting ratio of about 60 to 1, which in documentary filmmaking is not outrageously long. So deciding what not to use is almost the bigger decision at the early stage. And then trying to squeeze what you think is an hour and a half of absolutely superb footage that cannot be cut to the floor. How am I going to squeeze this into half an hour? I can't. I have to cut more. Cut, cut, cut. So
how do you do that? What's the parameter?
Well, I transcribe, and I have. I had an assistant, one of my students, paid him to transcribe so that I could look at every word spoken. And the longer you look at it, the more you can say, you know, I can lose this middle sentence because it is covered halfway in sentence one and halfway in sentence three. So where, you know, how can I cut and not lose essential information? So that's a big part of it right there. A friend many years ago gave me a really good tip. He said, you should hold each shot that you're considering using against a single sentence that epitomizes what the film is. So I basically wrote a sentence that says something like, Tom Moran turned his disability 180 degrees into success for others. So that's the sentence I keep in my head. And whatever scene I'm considering using or even a short little shot, if it holds up, if it serves that sentence, great. If it doesn't, out.
It's fun, isn't it? The discipline of driving towards some kind of finished stuff.
I think it's more like childbearing. There's actually a lot of discomfort in it. Well, I found a shortcut is, all right, just for argument's sake, even though I'm not ready to let go of this scene I love, just for a test, let's take it out and play it and see if it works. Oh, it works. Guess what? I don't miss it so much. So you go from A to C as a test. And that way you can actually make B a much less painful experience.
What's been your biggest fault that you've had to deal with?
Well, one I know is decisiveness. I'm actually not a very decisive person. But if you can imagine how many decisions are made in the editing phase, much less the shooting phase. Hundreds of decisions per edit session on a given day or half day. Also, regarding decisiveness, having made a decision and then saying, I don't know, I think I need to reopen that one multiple times.
What's your greatest strength? I don't believe in just focusing on the weaknesses.
I think it's that thing we talked about either realizing or deciding that the film needs to live up to the subject. I've picked subjects that have overcome great odds, and so the film has to overcome great odds.
What in you attracts you to that as a subject?
I was born with a cleft lip and palate, and I had some surgical experiences that were unpleasant. I had social experiences that were unpleasant in the schoolyard, being picked on, hit. Affected me pretty deeply. A number of years ago, I ran into some folks. They were part of a group called About Face. It was a national, international organization of people and families with facial birth defects or other kind of facial deformities. I was drawn to the subject for personal reasons, and I met some fantastic people. I suddenly found myself saying, I'd like to interview you. I'm thinking of a film. So that was the first of two films I made about facial birth defects. That was titled Face First. It was about me and three others. I told my story. I even interviewed my mother on camera. She did a very good job. What made it so good was after the first 10 minutes, she forgot the camera. So she was just talking to me, her son.
Well, I smiled while I was watching Why Me, particularly while Tom was interacting with kids.
Uh-huh. Many of these disabled kids Tom serves are very nervous. He tells a story in the film about this boy who was literally shaking when his parents brought him to a soccer camp. Tom spent just 15 minutes with him, trying to persuade him and convince him it's okay. At the end of that two-hour soccer camp, he runs up to Tom and says, Coach Tom, I scored 6 goals today. Can I come back tomorrow? And that's where Tom says, that made me realize the importance of these programs. It's not the sport or the fitness itself, it's empowerment.
How do you handle working both with sound and pictures? Sound that drives the structure of the mm-hmm. film, or is it the pictures?
It's a little of both. It's situational. If there's a great action scene, such as they're in the fitness room and they're trying to do a certain thing and they're cracking up and laughing, that's great in and of itself. That's an actuality. That's something you don't want to, you know, throw interview stuff on top of.
So the sound and the picture come from the same source, that
yeah.
event.
Yeah, so that's an experience that you know, want to give to the viewer wholesale. But in the interview, the long interview that I did actually toward the very end of shooting, a lot was said, especially about his history, but also the present day as far as why he does what he does and how he does what he does. It's all important stuff to get in there. So I got to pick the best nuggets and not just throw what we call B-roll on top of it, which is let's just find any old visuals to slap on top of what he's saying. That illustrates it. You know, a classic example is a news story about smoking, and you show people
smoking.
Holding cigarettes and their bellies and not their faces smoking. Yeah. So, you know, looking for footage that doesn't merely mirror or illustrate a point, it might actually add to it, you know, where the sum is greater than the parts. Sometimes you get lucky with a little synergy that way.
You said your brief was to have your finished film come up to the standard of your subject, do justice to your subject.
Mm-hmm.
How you feel about this?
Oh, at this ending point?
Yeah.
Pretty well. Pretty well. I feel pretty well. I showed it to him. He said, well, one thing he said was, I'm amazed that you put this together. I had no idea that, you know, so many different pieces could be collected and put together in, you know, a coherent form. getting feedback from others, especially my colleagues and some filmmaking friends from years ago, is crucial. There's no way I could make or finish or release a film without getting detailed feedback from others whose opinions I respect. So in the credits, you'll see 20 names, people who all watched that thing through at least once, if not three times, and gave me very detailed feedback. If it wasn't detailed enough, I pressed them on it. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, can't see the forest for the trees, living so long with it.
Are you trying to communicate a specific point, or did you make a film that you thought told somebody's story and it's up to me to get a point from it?
I wanted to just let the viewer experience Tom mm-hmm. in his manifold forms. So video as a medium allows you to experience in a very real way that other media cannot necessarily. One of the things one of my colleagues told me that I felt best about, he said, this one scene here, you cannot help but smile during the whole scene. And I said, okay, there's some kind of success happening.
You'll find a link with information about tonight's free Harrisonburg screening of Mike Grundman's documentary, Why Me, Tom Moran's Long Walk, on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Why Me will be preceded at Court Square Theater by Mike's earlier film, The Perfect Flaw.